Welcome to the debate. Imagine being handed a medical diagnosis that gives you, say, 12 months to live.
Yeah, it's unimaginable.
Right. And then, in the very next breath, being told you have to spend the next 18 months fighting a massive corporation in court just to secure your family's financial future.
It's a brutal reality.
It really is. So, today, we are looking at a legal framework where time itself is, well, it's the ultimate weapon. We are analyzing the highly complex, multi-tiered system of mesothelioma compensation.
Exactly. And the central question we're debating today is this. Does our current multi-channel framework, which heavily relies on private settlements, bankruptcy trusts, and veteran benefits, does it effectively balance the immediate, desperate financial needs of victims?
Or does it structurally force an unfair trade-off? Does it basically utilize a biological ticking clock to sacrifice maximum corporate accountability and higher compensation just for a quick resolution?
Right.
So I take the position that the system's diversification is actually an extraordinarily victim-centric design. By combining the speed of trust funds and VA benefits with, you know, the reliability of negotiated settlements, it efficiently delivers necessary financial security. And it does this without exposing highly vulnerable patients to the severe risks of an all-or-nothing trial.
And my position is that the overarching legal framework leverages the terminal nature of mesothelioma against the victim. I mean, by utilizing these grueling legal timelines, the system acts as a pressure cooker. It structurally forces plaintiffs into private, lower-value settlements. And in doing so, it ultimately protects corporate bad actors from facing public juries and the massive punitive damages that actually change corporate behavior.
Okay, but to really understand the architecture of this system, we have to look at the sheer reality of the crisis it was designed to address. When someone receives a mesothelioma diagnosis, the financial burden is just absolute.
Oh, for sure. The medical costs alone are staggering.
Right. We are talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical expenses. You have the immediate loss of income and obviously immense emotional strain. So the legal framework we have today is essentially a systemic safety net built for certainty in the face of that chaos.
A safety net, but
An average mesothelioma case results in a lawsuit settlement of somewhere between $1 million and $1.4 million. But what makes the system functional is that we aren't just relying on a single prolonged lawsuit. The system relies on parallel channels.
I wouldn't exactly call them parallel if they all force you to compromise, but go on.
Well, there are over 60 bankruptcy trust funds currently holding more than $30 billion in combined assets. These trusts process claims entirely separate from the courts, often in a matter of months. You add that to the lawsuit, and you begin to see a comprehensive safety net.
Yeah, but calling it a comprehensive safety net completely ignores the massive disparity between those average settlement figures and what these cases are actually worth in a court of law.
You mean the trial verdicts?
Exactly. When these cases actually go to a jury, trial verdicts routinely return between $5 million and $20 million.
Sure, when they win.
And sometimes significantly more. So why does that massive gap exist? It exists because the timeline of the legal process is structurally weaponized against the plaintiff. If you're listening to this, you might be wondering, well, why would anyone willingly settle for $1 million when a jury might give them $20
million? Because of the risk.
No. The answer comes down to biological time. The discovery phase of a lawsuit, that period where both sides exchange evidence, that takes anywhere from 6 to 18 months.
Which is standard for complex litigation, but these aren't standard plaintiffs. Imagine being on oxygen, undergoing aggressive chemotherapy, and sitting across from three corporate defense lawyers who are demanding you recall the exact brand of joint compound you used on a Tuesday in 1982.
I'm not saying it's easy.
That timeline and the physical toll of that process, that is what forces plaintiffs to accept a fraction of their case's true value.
Okay, I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective. You're characterizing the 6 to 18 month discovery period as a weapon wielded intentionally by the defense. But proving the strength of exposure evidence is a foundational requirement of any functional justice system.
But the burden.
You cannot hold a company liable for millions of dollars without documenting exactly where, when, and how the asbestos exposure occurred. But let's look at how the multi-channel system is specifically designed to mitigate that exact timeline. Think of it like a diversified financial portfolio.
I struggle to see how a financial portfolio analogy applies to a terminal cancer patient.
Because the mechanics of mitigating risk are exactly the same. Look, in a financial portfolio, you have long-term assets that take time to mature, and you have short-term bonds that provide immediate liquidity.
Okay.
In this legal framework, the primary lawsuit against solvent companies is your long-term asset. It takes 1 to 3 years to fully resolve. But the patient isn't left empty-handed during that time, because the other channels act as your short-term bond.
You mean the trusts?
Right. Those 60-plus bankruptcy trust funds we mentioned. Because they operate outside the court system, claims are processed in months. A victim might receive $10,000 from one trust, $50,000 from another, and $20,000 from a third, all within the first year.
Right, but...
And wait. Furthermore, for military veterans, the system layers on VA benefits. For a 100% disability rating in 2026, a veteran receives upwards of $3,900 tax-free every single month alongside comprehensive VA health care.
Which is great, but it doesn't excuse the primary system's flaws.
It provides crucial, immediate liquidity to pay for surgery, palliative care, and the mortgage while the larger lawsuit matures. It feeds resources to the victims so they don't have to starve while waiting for justice.
It keeps them afloat, sure. But the reality of the system is that it keeps them afloat just long enough to accept a lowball offer. Let's actually look closely at those bankruptcy trusts you mentioned.
Okay.
Yes. They process claims in months, but they pay literal pennies on the dollar. Because these companies filed for Chapter 11 reorganization, they were allowed to cap their liabilities.
They surrendered billions in assets to do that.
They put a set amount of money into a trust, and in exchange, they can never be sued again. And to ensure the trust doesn't run out of money for future victims, they only pay a payment percentage.
Right, which fluctuates.
Exactly. So if your claim is valued at $100,000 and the trust's payment percentage is 5%, you walk away with $5,000. That doesn't even cover a fraction of a month's medical bills for stage 4 mesothelioma.
But that's just one trust of many.
So the immediate liquidity you were talking about is a trickle. And while that trickle is coming in, the defense in the primary lawsuit knows the plaintiff is running out of time. They know the family is watching the patient suffer. That isn't just a legal timeline. It is immense psychological leverage.
I'm sorry, but you're calling a $1.4 million settlement capitulation, and you're entirely ignoring the profound risk of a jury trial.
I'm not ignoring it. I'm saying the system is skewed.
The reality of the courtroom is that not every case results in a plaintiff's verdict. Juries are inherently unpredictable. A defense attorney might successfully argue that the victim's exposure happened at a different job site or that the specific product didn't contain enough asbestos to cause the illness.
Which is why the discovery phase is so brutal, yes.
Right. And if a jury believes the defense, or even if just one or two jurors hold out, that family gets zero from that specific defendant. Zero. So is it intellectually charitable to ask a family facing immense emotional and financial strain to gamble their entire compensation on a jury verdict?
I wouldn't call it gambling.
Certainty is not capitulation. It is survival. If a lawyer sits down with a widow and says, look, we can take this $1.4 million guaranteed right now, which will pay off your house and ensure your children's college is funded, or we can roll the dice in front of 12 strangers next year, but you might get nothing. I mean, taking the settlement is the most rational, humane choice a person can make.
I completely understand the immense pressure that makes a family take that deal. My critique is not of the families. My critique is of a system that engineers that exact scenario.
By allowing settlements?
By forcing them through attrition. The immense gap between a $1.4 million settlement and a $20 million plus verdict proves that the system is structurally undervaluing human life under duress. But more importantly, let's talk about what society loses when the vast majority of these cases are pushed into private, closed-door settlements.
Society doesn't lose. Families gain certainty.
Society does lose because when cases go to trial, those $20 million verdicts often include punitive damages. Punitive damages are not just about compensating the victim. They are a specific legal mechanism designed to punish companies that knowingly concealed asbestos hazards. They are how society deters future corporate malfeasance.
Okay, but what does a theoretical headline or a societal deterrent actually do for a family facing foreclosure today? You are prioritizing abstract public square justice over the tangible, desperate need to pay for a hospital bed in someone's living room.
It isn't abstract to the next generation of workers. When companies are allowed to quietly settle for $1 million behind closed doors with a non-disclosure agreement, they avoid any public admission of guilt.
They still pay the $1 million.
Yeah, but they avoid the headlines. They treat the $1.4 million as a simple line item in their risk management budget. By pushing everyone toward private settlements, the system deprives the public of accountability. We allow corporations to buy their way out of the punitive financial strikes that actually force behavioral change across industries. We trade systemic accountability for a fraction of what these companies should be forced to pay.
Well, your argument isolates a single mechanism of accountability, the jury trial, and completely ignores the macro-level impact of the system as a whole.
How so?
You're suggesting that accountability only happens in front of a jury. Let's go back to the bankruptcy trusts. You characterized them earlier as a way for companies to just, you know, cap their liabilities.
Which they are.
But consider the scale. Over 60 major asbestos manufacturers were forced into bankruptcy reorganization because of the relentless pressure of this exact legal framework. Over $30 billion in combined corporate assets was permanently surrendered and transferred into these trusts.
Through bankruptcy protection.
Yes, but that $30 billion is entirely dedicated to paying out claims across tens of thousands of victims, past, present, and future. That is a massive structural transfer of wealth from corporate bad actors directly to the people they harmed. A single $20 million verdict makes a great headline, sure, but forcing an entire industry to surrender $30 billion of its capital, that is systemic accountability on a scale that trials alone simply cannot achieve.
But it is accountability sanitized by bankruptcy protection. It's a calculated corporate retreat. And, you know, this brings up another massive structural flaw in the way this compensation is distributed. The sheer geographical arbitrariness of it all.
Okay, state variations, sure.
Exactly. The value of your suffering is heavily influenced by the state where your case is filed. State courts have entirely different evidentiary standards and procedural rules. I mean, in some states, a plaintiff might only need to prove that asbestos was generally present at their workplace. In other states, the courts require you to prove that you worked directly with a specific defendant's product on a specific day, inhaling a specific amount of dust.
Which is a high bar, I'll admit.
It's an impossible bar for some. Because of these varying standards, some states have incredibly plaintiff-friendly courts, while others are historical dead zones for asbestos litigation. So how can we call this a balanced, victim-centric system when the financial value of a person's life is physically altered by the geographic jurisdiction they happen to live in? Justice should be uniform. It shouldn't be an arbitrary lottery.
Look, geographic variability is undeniably a limitation in the American legal system at large, not just in asbestos litigation. State laws differ because we operate under a federalist system.
Right, but it affects these patients disproportionately.
But that geographic reality is precisely why the multi-channel approach is so vital. It is the engineered remedy to that local variability. A skilled attorney doesn't just file one lawsuit in one local court and cross their fingers. They cast an incredibly wide net based on the documented evidence.
Assuming they have the evidence.
Let's say a victim was exposed while serving in the Navy, but also while working construction later in life. Their legal team might file claims with 10 different federal bankruptcy trusts, initiate a VA benefits claim, and name 15 different solvent defendants in a lawsuit filed in the most favorable jurisdiction where the exposure occurred.
Okay.
So if your local state court has hostile evidentiary standards, you aren't entirely reliant on it because you have parallel claims processing at the federal level and nationally through the trusts. The system allows you to bypass the local lottery by diversifying your avenues of pursuit.
That strategy sounds excellent in theory, but have you considered that casting this wide net still relies on an impossibly high evidentiary burden that many victims simply cannot meet?
It requires evidence, yes.
The success of every single one of these pathways, the trusts, the lawsuits, the VA benefits, It all hinges entirely on the strength of exposure evidence. Mesothelioma has a latency period of 20 to 50 years.
Right.
The system demands that a person whose body is currently failing them produce pristine historical documentation from half a century ago.
The burden of proof is high, absolutely, but we cannot abandon the requirement of proof just because the latency period is long. Liability must be established. Otherwise, the entire concept of justice collapses into arbitrary payouts.
But the burden shouldn't crush the victim.
That is exactly why the initial consultation and case evaluation period is so rigorous. It involves attorneys, medical experts, and investigators aggressively researching employment records, union logs, and military service histories. They identify exactly which products were used at which sites decades ago. It's an investigative partnership designed to lift the burden of memory off the patient.
But the power dynamic in that partnership is fundamentally, irrevocably skewed. Think about what is actually happening during that investigation phase. You have the plaintiff relying on fading memories and whatever paper trail managed to survive the last 40 years.
And they're a legal team.
Right. But on the other side, you have multinational corporations with vast digitized archives of employment records, product shipping logs, and armies of defense attorneys whose explicit job is to delay the process.
That's litigation.
But look at the result. When the defense begins negotiating those $1.4 million settlements you praised earlier, they are offering that money out of fairness. They are calculating the exact minimum amount required to make the plaintiff walk away without risking a trial.
They're managing risk.
Exactly. Their internal risk models tell them a jury would award $15 million. So they offer $1.4 million today because they know the plaintiff might not live to see next year. It is brilliant risk management for the corporation, brilliantly disguised as certainty for the victim.
Well, to summarize my position in light of everything we've discussed today, I maintain that the current compensation framework is a highly effective, necessary adaptation to a deeply tragic reality.
Mm-hmm.
Mesothelioma is a devastating diagnosis. It brings absolute financial ruin if left unaddressed. And in response to that, the legal system has developed a multi-tiered safety net. By leveraging the fast-acting liquidity of bankruptcy trusts, the lifelong security of VA benefits, including dependency and indemnity compensation, which ensures a surviving spouse receives a tax-free stipend for the rest of their life, and the negotiated reliability of lawsuit settlements, the system provides the most dependable way to secure millions of dollars.
If they can navigate it.
It covers exorbitant medical expenses, replaces lost wages, and secures a family's future without forcing them to gamble their entire livelihood on a single unpredictable trial verdict. In the face of terminal illness, certainty has profound, measurable value.
And from my perspective, while I fully acknowledge that these various mechanisms provide essential, life-sustaining relief for families in crisis, we cannot ignore the structural inequities at the heart of the system.
Okay. The overarching legal framework utilizes grueling discovery periods, high evidentiary burdens, and the immense pressure of a shortened life expectancy to systematically push victims toward private, lower-value settlements. And in doing so, the system protects companies that knowingly poison workers from facing the 20 million-plus verdicts and the public punitive damages they truly deserve. The cost of the certainty you are advocating for is too often maximum corporate accountability.
I think one clear area of convergence between us is our recognition of the absolute, devastating burden this diagnosis places on patients and their families. The human cost of this disease is staggering.
Completely.
We also fundamentally agree that regardless of which path is taken, the success of any compensation claim is undeniably reliant on the precise, rigorous documentation of exposure evidence. Proving exactly where, when, and how the exposure occurred is really the linchpin of the entire apparatus.
Absolutely. Without that specific evidence, the trusts, the VA, and the courts simply do not function. The system requires proof, and finding that proof is a monumental task.
Right. The profound tension between a victim's need for immediate life-sustaining speed and society's desire for comprehensive public accountability is a hallmark of complex legal frameworks. It's a delicate balancing act, and there are incredibly strong arguments on both sides of the scale.
There really are.
So we invite you to dive deeper into the mechanics we discussed today. look into how the Chapter 11 bankruptcy trusts are funded, research the state-by-state variants in evidentiary standards, and explore the specific VA dependency options available to veterans and their spouses.
And we will leave the ultimate conclusion on which legal path serves justice best entirely up to you.
Thank you for listening.